online, a viable option, and at our website, stevebeck.com. Another very pretty and brisk, fresh morning at Churchill today. Kind of a quiet training session, and just a lot of galloping and some first appearances, and we'll tick through them. I think we're going to hear from Mike Welch for the first time later this morning around the 10:30 mark after some turf works. We're putting out the dogs, putting out the cones for turf works today on that lush, pristine turf course. The news, though, that is most important and most pressing and most influential toward next Saturday. Brad Cox confirming this morning that Caddo River will run, will enter, will run, and will contribute mightily to the pace. There had been, you know, with starting with the concert tour news, there had been plenty of speculation that, you know, all the pace that had been envisioned was, you know, slowly being extracted from the front end. And Caddo River's inclusion, at the very least, provides company for, you know, some of the candidates to be out, you know, depending on the draw, depending on who has to be used early for position, etc. Caddo River's presence guarantees that there'll be some early separation and some spreading right, you know, right from the bell. It's for everybody except for King Fury, who gets pushed from the 20 slot to the 21 slot. Other than for King Fury, this is probably a positive development for, you know, the mid-pack stalkers, for the late runners. Getting Caddo back into the fold means a lot. It means a lot. And we'll talk about it with Mike, probably talk about it with Rich Migliori as well. I think Rich is set to visit 10 o'clock, feeling a lot better after his second vaccination shot. The conversation will start. In fact, we'll maybe actually might reach out. You know what? I might reach out to Nick and see if he wants to. It is about the time that we, you know, usually by now, midweek, we start to lay that out. And so with Caddo River's confirmation and what feels like a set 20 for now, I mean, barring anybody having a hiccup, there are no other pending decisions. The interest, or, you know, the thought that crowded trade, that was never, you know, a serious potential for unless something happened to highly motivated. So the 20 is set. And, you know, from a speculative basis, from front to back, you can envision, you know, Caddo River and Rock Your World, Medina Spirit, Midnight Bourbon, Soup and Sandwich, highly motivated, you know, basically being your front third. That's six. So there's your, you know, your first quadrant or triad, as it were. And then, you know, the middle of the pack types, depending. I'm saying that there's no movement to be seen yet, but, you know, seeing Dreamshake's name makes me realize that there is still a decision, I suppose, pending from Peter and his camp regarding Dreamshake, whether they'll derby it or Pat Day it. But if he were to participate, Sainthood and Dreamshake and Mandaloon, then maybe Essential Quality, I suppose, Hot Rod Charlie, somewhere in that middle set. I guess like the king, probably in the middle third. And then you've got the closers and the deep closers. The tail end, I suppose, of that middle group. Helium, if King Fury were to get in, you'd figure that's where he'd be. Getter Number would be there. And then your deep closers, Superstock, Bourbonic, Obisos. Known agenda. Going to have to be some decision-making there. And I suppose a lot of this stuff ends up, based on position, on who draws where. Obviously, anybody that wants to be somewhat forward, if you draw from six in, you're going to be used a little bit early to gain position. Then there's the ones that, just will spill out of the gate and set up shop at the back of the field. That includes, Hidden Stash, too, and Dynamic One, Obisos. So there's just a quick run through from front to back, just getting a feel. But it feels very much a good development that Cato is involved, because he will not necessarily quarter horse it, but he will be out and out quick. Now I don't think we heard, at least I didn't hear it, about a rider decision. There had been early speculation that I had heard that Manny Franco was eligible potentially to land Caddo River, but that was going much closer back to Arkansas Derby fallout. So we'll wait. Maybe we'll even reach out to Brad and get some insight on that front. In terms of who was out this morning, I put up a couple of little vid clips. The Chad Brown pair over from Keeneland and highly motivated, and search results for Seth Klarovich. Both really just the picture out there. Focused and it could not be more polished and professional. And I use the word, did I say controlled aggression? It had that, that very focused, you could tell a horse that wants to do more but isn't fighting. Has got that fighter coming, not in the ring, not the immediate pre-fight prance, but sort of that shoulder sway from the locker room to the edge of the ring, that kind of intensity. They look great. A lot of galloping out there today. Malafat, the Pletcher horses that have been coming out at the 7:30 training. Malafat got the first good look at her, and she's an imposing specimen. No mistake. She looks like a bruiser out there. And who else did I get a look at? That saw Milfay came by, and Crazy Beautiful as well. Soup and Sandwich was out with the early sets this morning before the sun rose. We also got Mandaloon. It's funny, Kevin Kirstein, and I hope you enjoyed Kevin. I thought we had a great introduction to the week with Kevin yesterday. And we were talking as Mandaloon went by, the other one of the three Brad Cox participants. And he's going to be one of the more difficult equations, one of the tougher horses in this field to know what to do with. And is he a war of will type that, you know, after looking good through the early part of the winter and seemingly, you know, not having a stone in his path, a straw in his path, as they say, then gets beat and has to regroup and turns around and then wins the Preakness. So I don't know. It's certainly absolutely breathtakingly handsome horse. If his resume keeps growing, and if it gets to that, you know, it gets to the point where he becomes, you know, a stallion property, and he's, you know, he's got a risen star to his credit so far, but he's the kind of horse that when they do a stallion show, the people's heads are going to explode. And speaking of which, there she is, Jenny Reese, the one and only. Good to see you. First sighting of Jenny. We'll get you. I'm not going to delay. We're going to get you in here early. All right. Well, you're going to go sit down for a little bit in the back?
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to, without fail, I've got, we're going to reach Tom Ventura to start OBS in a minute, but
Can I shamelessly plug the Second Stride fundraiser?
Yeah, you can. Of course you can. Of course you can. You can. And Kentucky Downs and anything else. All of your client lists, the great Jenny Reese, everybody. The one concern we've got is we still haven't seen Marty apparently has, as Darren Rogers said, blown a tire, apparently has hurt his knee and is facing a knee replacement. I don't know what else can transpire. So we're looking forward to catching up with Marty when we get a chance to see him. So that's usually Tuesday is the, you know, right about now, usually we get the opening salvos from Mart. But anyway, Mandaloon looks a picture at a stallion show. He's going to be impressive. But I don't know what, I have no idea how he finds his way necessarily onto my own tickets anyway. So, other than that, I mentioned the Pletcher group. I didn't see Sainthood. I just saw Known Agenda, Dynamic One. I don't think I saw Bourbonic either. And that pretty much was it. It was a fairly quiet training session. Nice crowd, better, even a bigger crowd today than yesterday. And of course, Sunday, as I put up that picture, didn't really do justice. There was a very big crowd here, and you know, free to come in and visit and enjoy. So when you get, if you're in town fairly early next week, on Thurby and Oaks Day, of course, it's too late. But you know, if you come into town for the majority of the week, and I think they're, you know, given that we're going to have a sizable attendance figure, I think there's probably quite a few that, you know, of you listening that are going to come in for the better part of the week. So you'll be able to come out and enjoy the morning session. I'll table Derby conversation for visits with Mike Welch and now with Jenny. Let me pencil Jenny in. I mentioned Tom Ventura. We're going to talk to Tom in a little bit here as we get the opening going. And OBS starts its run today. And it's been a little bit of a difficult, getting the Breeze show in was no picnic. The volatile weather, north central Florida, making it a bit of a hassle, but it all got done, and they'll start knocking them under gavel today, 10:30. So we'll catch up with Tom, and we'll be keeping an eye on some of the first crop stallions and some of the big names, watching for some of the big pinhook successes. And even in advance of Tom's visit, we wish everybody, all the breeders, consigners, buyers, everybody, best of luck here in the next few days. And then, of course, we'll get a little bit of a recap when Gary Young breezes into town, his traditional Ocala to Louisville swing. A few things news-wise, and I'm not going to talk too much about it right this second, because I intend to bring it up with Rich, with Migliori, and in advance, and then probably afterward on Thursday with Tony. The California Horse Racing Board is going to revisit that added whip rule change. The good news is it does not appear that the over-the-top penalties that they had seemingly been considering, it does not appear that that's part of the, you know, of the revisit. Strictly, some suspension periods and so forth. But that 50% of the purse penalty and so forth, that was taken off the table. But they are tomorrow seemingly going to have that floated again in their monthly meeting. So be aware that there'll be some headlines on that. Speaking of headlines, I have to mention it. I didn't want to start the week yesterday with it, but you saw by now, I imagine, the last 36 hours, a very sad news from the UK, where amateur jump rider Lorna Brooke died on Sunday. And she had been in hospital for, I don't know, 2 weeks essentially, and they just called it complications. They had put her in an induced coma, and the outpouring about it is really sad, obviously. So, just a reminder. It's one of those realities that should only enhance your admiration for what these riders do anywhere or in any form of equine sport. It doesn't matter, because we've heard of tragedies. You know, there's tragedies even in the show world. So. This one, very tough. Now, I will mention on the jump front, and not that the fact that Lorna was female, but I think we're close to getting that visit in with Rachel Blackmore. We finally I think some of the dust is settling for Rachel off the Grand National victory weekend before last. And so I do want to mention that I think we're going to visit with her. Looking forward to that maybe tomorrow or Thursday. A couple of other little news tidbits that arose. Word circulating. In fact, I saw Gary Palmisano this morning as he was coming in, and news came out yesterday. He had told Pete that they're going to go back to the dollar superfectus with the crowd back on track. There'll be the $1 minimum superfecta. So for those that had been wondering and asking, there's your answer. So back to the $1 super, and also a force out, a must pay on the Derby Day pick six. All right. So those are seemingly annual questions, and especially in light of the 10-cent opportunity last year, the return to the dollar super. All right. That takes care of that. All right. And what else? There you go. Yesterday, let me slip in a little bit of a quick race recapping. I didn't mention as we were wrapping up yesterday, you know, we had pretty much end-to-end action. Indiana, week two, got underway, and Randy Klopp, I'm going to assume that, you know, some people have latched on and you know, taken advantage since we talked to him after opening day last week. He came back with two more wins yesterday. He's won every day. Yeah, of the 3 days. Yeah, he has. So Randy Klopp, as kind of suggested, sharp from the gate at Indiana. We'll talk tomorrow to Bill Downs. They got a nice card again today. Yesterday they did another. You know, they're doing 2 million every card. They had a fairly, you know, straightforward set of races, including a 1-9 winner in the nightcap. So the pick four and the pick five were readily approachable, just $78 in the pick four and a little under $300, $295 in the pick five. As it happens, the Randy Klopp winner in the seventh was actually second choice. There was a 6-5 that really didn't have much to offer, as it turned out. Michael and Penny Lauer with a maiden winner yesterday as well. Deshaun Parker getting on track and racking up some wins. So getting underway. And I might look, Papo's going to be by at the end of the show. We're going to recap the weekend on Form to Win, including my incredible miscue. I don't even know how to explain it. You know, we had talked about the horse at Keeneland, and I managed to leave her off the pick five ticket, and it cost me the whole thing. That Brooke Marie left $3,600 on the table, had all the tough horses and the two tough horses, and somehow I was not too pleased, to be honest. I could see it happening as the race was unfolding. But I know some of you, you know, the winners were all laid out somewhere in the selections, and I know some people, I heard from some people that hit. So, but anyway, we'll talk to Papo later, and I've got a glance at races 7 and 9 today at Indiana, 2:25 Eastern, and I think I'm going to try to get over there tomorrow after the show. Yeah, that's my goal. So I can slip that in, because next week's going to get busy, because including, you know, obviously the draws Tuesday, and the Monday is that fundraiser at the new farm, the new TRF farm outside of town. So I'll give you more details about that. That's going to be fun. And I've also got to get out to Hill and Dale. There's a lot to do. I mean, this is you think it's all fun and games? No, it's not. The OBS sale. We're going to reach for Tom Ventura here, Case. Let's get Tom in here, and then we'll take a break, and I'll come back, and we'll get some thoughts from Jenny Reese. Also, Richard Mandela today. Richard literally wrapped the show up yesterday, and as I'm packing up, the phone after the Santa Anita Oaks, the confirmation came yesterday that Soothsay is not participating in the Oaks. So his initial reaction, you know, was that it was too much too soon. I mean, you know, it would be a third start, as we brought up yesterday with Kevin Kerstead. So right now, and I'll give you a quick here's the current lineup. In fact, I put this out, I think, late yesterday afternoon. Search results, Chad and Arad, travel column, Brad Cox, Florent Giroux, Crazy Beautiful for Kenny McPeak and Jose Ortiz. I saw her on the track today. Pauline's Pearl, Steve Asmussen, and Ricardo Santana Jr. Malathat, as mentioned. Joel, there was news yesterday, actually, to throw that out there, that Marty reported, and that included the sort of swapping of mounts for Joel Rosario and John Velasquez. This was interesting, I thought, as well. Johnny gets back on Malathat, and Joel ends up on Milfay for Bill Mott. So there was jock movement there as well. And Soothsay's out. Clairiere for Steve Asmussen, who had a beautiful work the other day. Will Secret, who looks terrific for Dallas Stewart. Aforementioned, Milfay Morass, Umberto Rispoli for Michael McCarthy, and Ava's Grace, Diodoro. I don't have a jock assigned yet, I suppose, Davey Cohen. Pass the Champagne, who's going to be a fancy for a lot of people, Javier and George Weaver. Maracuja, Kendrick and Rob Attriss, and the filly from the Calder filly, as we were referring to her yesterday, that has been added to the field, and they're all excited to be participating. And as we said, kind of sad on that front that she's going to be the last competitive speed, is who I'm thinking of, and Javier Gonzalez. Tom Ventura, speaking of Florida, Tom Ventura joins us at OBS, an hour away from the start of the April sale, and hopefully all the rotten weather and the delays and the interference is behind you, Tom. Good morning.
Yeah, it's always a challenge, but, you know, we're looking forward to a good day. We've got some storms, actually, to my left as I'm walking around the barn area, but it's been fortunate that we were able to make it work. Obviously, we have a racetrack that can handle plenty of rain, and the conditions, you know, the last 2 days when everybody's, you know, doing all the looking, yeah, we've got plenty of window to get these horses looked at. It was kind of a typical Florida. You know, it would rain, it would stop, and then it would rain again. But we probably had a solid 6 hours, you know, in between. And the barns were busy right till probably, you know, past feeding time, normal feeding time, 4 o'clock or so. People were showing horses. So it was good. It's good to see there's a lot of people on the ground. So looking forward to a good sale.
How difficult do you think it made it for people to discern, you know, the work times and, you know, the track condition and you know, the various sets of horses, you know, that came out at different times, kind of a little added wrinkle in terms of evaluations?
Yeah, you know, the one thing we do, because wind certainly impacts the way these horses go, and on the one day was pretty windy from almost the very beginning, and it picked up pretty strong throughout the day. And then the last day would be the most unique day in that it rained very hard, and we delayed the start, and the track started out quick, and then the wind kicked in the opposite direction. We do display that wind on the monitors, so when people are watching it live or watching it reviewed, they can factor all that in. And you know, ultimately, we've got pretty sharp buyers that figure there's a lot of things that come into play when they buy a horse. You know, one is the time and one is the way in which they do it. And then they come and sort through them at the barns and see which ones that, you know, kind of fit their criteria.
The, you know, the sense as we, you know, as we're basically, you know, getting into the steady drumbeat on the two-year-old in training sale season. It feels like, you know, there's a good atmosphere, Tom. I mean, what was your post? We talked obviously in March, but then after the March sale came the Florida sale for phasing. What's the general sense? Has the overall scene or feel changed much?
No, I think, you know, it was very positive. I think people are ready to get back to doing what they like to do, and, you know, hopefully buying horses is one of them. But, based on the people on the ground here, I think one of the things that was, you know, very good to see in March is that there was strength at all levels. So we had horses that were getting bought for, you know, $500,000 and horses getting bought for $70,000 and $30,000, and there was, you know, a buyback rate of 15%. So, you know, while it wasn't like 2 years prior, we didn't expect it to be. And the people that bought the horses, they bought them, you know, in the market that was a down market somewhat in the fall. And so just to see people wanting to buy horses, and, you know, and then we have the other ways for people to buy, and the online bidding has been popular. But it's good to see a lot of people just enjoy being here and doing their legwork here. And sometimes if they can't stay the entire time, I think that's where the online bidding really helps.
Well, this sale, all you have to do is go back to last April. And I did some sale tally work and, you know, saw that among the participants and potential participants, Panadol came out of the Derby, obviously, but is pointing toward Belmont. But Medina Spirit, a $35,000 OBS purchase, as well as Dream Shake, $75,000. Get Her Number, $45,000. Sainthood was a fall yearling, but $62,000. I mean, OBS producing a strong showing in this Derby field.
Yeah, and it's nice to see we're on a normal path to the Derby this year, and some of our horses are going to be able to be there and participate and hopefully do well. You know, the Medina Spirit story is a good one, $1,000 yearling, and then the $35,000 two-year-old. And, you know, that the same buyer, the owner of that horse, they bought Princess Noor for $1,350,000 and that one for $35,000. So it goes to show you that you can find them at any price range. And obviously she showed up. She is retired now and joined the Broodmare Band, but she won a grade one. And Medina Spirit has certainly, outperformed his price tag.
Well, and you also, the one horse I didn't mention, I'm just realizing, the Jeff Ruby winner, Like the King, was $170,000 OBS yearling.
Yes, yeah, the yearling, you know, we sell so many two-year-olds that obviously the two-year-old sales produce, the majority of the runners, but our yearling sale has really been doing well. It's good to see, you know, one of those horses jump up and join the fray at the top of the ranks.
For today, and for, you know, for these 4 days, how many outs? I did not get a chance to do anything last night or this morning on how many came out of the sale after the breezes.
I think, you know, even going in before the breezes started, you know, there was quite a few outs. So I would say probably there will be 60 outs for the whole day.
Okay.
So we'll get up there, get started, hopefully have something to build off today. And I think we have some, fireworks maybe a little later in the sale. I think they're spread out, the good horses, or at least the perceived good horses with big pedigrees, I think will jump up and sell well.
You know, and of course, one of the favorite things that we enjoy doing is tracking the first crops. And there is there's significant representation on the first crop sires and looking to kind of continue some momentum. There's almost close to three dozen Klimps in this sale. And, of course, Gunrunner is going to be a major focus throughout the rest of the spring going forward. You've got Classic Empire, Connect, Cupid, all heavily represented. The Arrogates, I had a discussion with Jessica Martini a couple of weeks ago, Tom. You know, they're going to be coveted because there's going to be this limited number of them. American Freedom has had a flashy start so far and seems to be attracting attention. So there's a serious array of first crop power on display in here.
Yeah, and it's like you said, I think it's quality, and it's a lot of depth to the quality of this first crop group. It may surprise you, it may not, but there's about 190 sires represented in this sale.
Wow.
So something, there's a flavor. If you can't find a horse in this sale, you haven't worked hard enough.
Well, and then, of course, after this week and after Derby, the scene will shift to Maryland for Timonium, and then after Belmont, back down for June. And, you know, June, I'm sure, you know, given the way in which a lot of, you know, the ebb and flow and a lot of schedules were interrupted from last year, chances are that June is going to be an attractive proposition for people looking to fill their orders.
Yes, yeah, I think, and the June sale has progressed, and the consigners certainly want to give their horses the best chance. So, you know, if the horse needs a little more time, or if it's a horse that just maybe they got started late, it's a good outlet for them. You know, Golden Sense came out of that sale years ago, Medina Spirit last year, which was July, not June. But, you know, the sale is certainly picked up over the years and become an established part of the two-year-old market. And I think it's, you know, it's a place where, you know, people can get some horses. And again, it'll be a wide range of horses from the top end, where a horse can jump up and bring 750, you know, maybe a million if things go right, you know. And then there's plenty of $50,000 horses to buy that fits, you know, a lot of people's racing stables.
Now, we're about 45 minutes or so away, and the start of the OBS March sale, and the two-year-olds that'll feed right into programs and the summer racing at the highest level. And, Tom, best of luck to everybody down there, and people can watch at obssales.com and at all the industry organs, all provide feeds as well. And we'll be watching for pinhook scores and some interesting themes coming out of the next 4 days.
I appreciate it, Steve. Thanks again for everything you do for us.
Not at all. Tom Ventura, everybody, OBS Sales. And this afternoon or this morning, you know, put it on in the background. And when you start to hear the numbers careening towards seven figures, pull the screen up and watch along. It's really one of the fun things. And I, you know, because I'm here and I'm kind of focused on what's going on at Churchill, I haven't looked really at today's pinhooks and you know, some of the potential big scores, but we'll look at some of the early returns tomorrow with Sid, and we'll also, as I mentioned, when Gary Young gets here, we'll get some of Gary's thoughts, and he'll sign a few tickets undoubtedly over the next 4 days as well. So OBS, and you know, that is an interesting. Really, it's. I think I said this last week, right? When I went over these horses, how encouraging it's got to be for, you know, for those of you that, you know, are a certain size and have, you know, a certain budget. Maybe you're in with a couple of other friends, and you know you're buying horses, and to see Get Her Number, 45,000 in last April's sale, to see Dream Shake, 75,000. In last April's sale. Panadol's not here, and it was more expensive, 180,000, but that's not anything completely out of whack, out of range. And then the 35,000 for Medina Spirit. So three Derby participants in this year's group came out of this April sale, and what you know, what was the average? 80. The average was 50,000. If you put the three together, some of you probably have that in the cushions of your couch. Well, you know, relatively speaking. Let's do this. We'll take a break here. Let me go get Jenny, we'll get Jenny Reese in. For in fact, Jenny's here. Yep. Hold on. She's going to tell me something. Maybe she's got big deadline. All right, you can do both. All right, there's Jenny. You know, Jenny's always she is the crossroads of everything that goes on. Yeah, right now. All right, so you do that, and I'm gonna. That's what we'll do. We'll take a quick break here. Then Jenny Reese is going to join us. Too funny. Back after a quick break at the races. We're at the Downs. Jenny Reese, Rich Migliori, Mike Welch, Richard Mandela, Papo Morales later, Papa Core One for some form to win. You know, they got the TVs on up in front, and they've been running the Kentucky Jockey Club over and over and over again. Who can I talk to? I don't. How many times do I have to see this? It just runs on a loop. Back after their break.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Back at the races, 15 to the top of the hour, and a nice transition and a chance for Jenny and I both to get set up. And Jenny Reese, happy Derby.
A happy Derby. Isn't it great that it's actually in May? I mean, it's wild to think it was just 7 months ago or whatever it was. The one good thing I'll say about the Derby last year was, wasn't it really easy to get around?
Yes, that for those that value that part of it, it was surreal.
It was surreal is the word. It did not seem at all like a Derby. So that's, and we've had this spectacular weather, which is really cool, and you know how we handicap trainers, just their body language as much as anything, and interesting to see, you know, Todd Pletcher is very relaxed and in a great mood. Chad Brown was out this morning. Yep. We were talking with him and in a great mood. And Steve Asmussen seems, you know, very happy with how his, both his colts and his Oaks horses are doing. And so that doesn't really help you handicap, I suppose, when everybody likes their horses.
But well,
that's why we got the Steve Bick show, though, to
parse
to
it down. Exactly. Well, and you bring up obviously some of the major principles, and the news this morning that it is the most, you know, significant in lieu of concert tour bypassing. The fact that Caddo River. One of the discussion points upstairs this morning in the clocker stand when the news came out was, you know, John Ed Anthony has been around the game for 50 years and is known as a, I don't want to say mercurial, but he's,
I think that's a good word.
It is a mercurial. All right, we're going to go with that then. And he can fluctuate.
He's an involved owner.
Yeah, very much. And has gone through trainers, you know, like some people, you know, go through socks. And Brad Cox, I think he's very comfortable. Cox wanted him in. And I know people are going to say, they are saying it, well, it helps essential quality.
I don't believe that for a minute. Yes. I think that Brad, if it was strictly left up to him, would train up to the Preakness. But having said that, he says, John Ed Anthony understands. I mean, the horse still has to work well and stuff. They have to show that he really bounced back. That's Brad's concern. He ran hard to come back in 3 weeks. He thinks, you know, training up the 5 weeks to the Preakness would be the play. But having said that, he also understands Mr. Anthony's been in this game over 50 years. He's won the Preakness twice. He's never won the Derby, though he was second with Prairie Bayou. He wants another shot at it. And I remember many years ago when I was with the Courier Journal and went to the Arkansas Derby. I can't remember if it was, I guess it was probably Pine Bluff's year, perhaps. No, it wasn't, because he just beat Lily T and Nose, and I don't remember if I was there for that. But anyways, regardless, we went and did a story on him, and he was talking about how he said, I don't know why anybody would ever breed a horse to go 6 furlongs. John and Anthony's whole thing was trying to breed for classic to buy or breed the classic horse, and with the idea of the Derby. So I'm not surprised that it's going this direction. I do think that if Brad really felt it was not in the horse's, you know, that it was going to be bad for the horse, that they'd have more conversation. And he even said, John Ed said that, I don't want to ruin the horse in the Derby.
Well, it was John Ed that actually had last week, at the end of the week, came out with those, you know, with those quotes about, you know, how the race is famous for grinding horses up.
And yes, yes. But I think he wants more. But I absolutely think if anybody thinks that Brad Cox is running that horse because it to be a rabbit, then they don't know John Ed Anthony or Brad Cox, because then there's no way he's going to use somebody else's horse to, you know, set up something for him. But having said that, it certainly made Chad Brown really happy to hear about Caddo River, because he thinks that Highly Motivated's best lick is not in front like he was in the Bluegrass. He wants a target. So he was thrilled to hear about Caddo River being in there.
Well, on that topic, in fact, there's several horses that, while they have an interest in being part of the pace, they aren't necessarily that they
right.
wouldn't necessarily be that eager to have the lead. And in fact, I kind of walked through the potential, you know, quadrants as we usually lay them out, and Caddo River's presence absolutely stretches out the front third of the field, and Rock Your World is interested. Medina Spirit is interested. Midnight Bourbon is naturally fast. I think that Mark Cassie's probably pleased too, because it means that Soup and Sandwich has got a target out there that he can track. And then there's Chad with Highly Motivated. So, you know, there's at least two or three that were on or near leads in their preps that you know, Connections didn't necessarily want to have that obligation in this race.
Right. And you find that on the Derby. You better have a horse. If you have a horse that likes to be up close, whether, you know, but maybe not on the lead, you also better, you're going to find out in the Derby if they're actually comfortable mid-pack or farther back, because for some of those horses, that's going to be the first time in their life that's going to perhaps happen. I'm thinking of Lily T, and he was a horse that was always up really close, and then in the Derby, he found himself back farther than he ever had been. And sort of speaking of Hot Springs, and just to tell another story, he ran in the Southwest, and Pat Day rode Lily T, and he got beat that day by a horse of Wayne Lucas's named Big Sir. And that day, in the middle of the race, Lily T was just so, you know, eager and everything. And Pat Day said, "We're going to learn something right now. This is mid race." And he just puts the anchor on that horse, forcing him to take back. And he got beat by Big Sir. And I remember Lynn Whiting, the trainer, was telling me this story because of some chagrin. He'd had pretty good-sized bet on Lily T that day. But the idea was to teach him for the future. And then, you know, it paid off in the Derby when he was maybe 10th early or something like that and came. So getting back to your point about you have those horses, some of them, you know, maybe they want to be third or fourth, but some of them are probably also going to be farther back. And sometimes you just don't know to the Derby. But, you know, great point about, you know, Caddo River and stretching out the field and stuff. It's just so fun to have, like I said, to have people on the backside again.
Yeah, no, it, very much. I mean, and the people on the apron, you know, these last several mornings, I got into town Saturday afternoon and Sunday morning, a little bit of a smaller crowd yesterday, nice crowd today, and it'll build through the week. And you know, and from the fourth floor, we can see across and you know, it'll start to fill up, you know, on the backside and particularly this weekend, you know, Saturday and Sunday, always, you know, really festive days on the backstretch. Yeah. I suppose all the TV crews will have their tents, and
yes,
will they be back?
They're going to be back. The TV and the radio. Yep, they sure are. So that's a sign of things getting sort of back to normal, that you have the, you know, broadcast row back there.
Talk since we went in this direction, and I'm going to bring up something that Jay Keeler Johnson did, which I'm sure you already are aware, and I've got a. We'll talk about, you know, your longstanding, you know, the most important column pre-Derby every single year. It changed your life. But let's stay with Brad Cox for a second. You know, we covered Caddo River. The other two runners, and maybe we'll work backwards toward the favorite. Speaking of eager, Mandaloon certainly worked a beautiful more than a half on Saturday, and the argument could be made that he worked better than Essential Quality. What's your philosophy, Jenny, on, you know, these penultimate works, you know, which typically are more serious than the ones this coming weekend? How, you know, over the years, what has been, you know, what has been your lean when it comes to watching these and making definitive calls about horses coming into the race?
Well, you need to pay attention to them, and too often I don't. I mean, there was that big mile work of Animal Kingdom, his year. They got a lot of people on him, and, you know, you mentioned the Final Fractions Theory. He didn't quite, you know, but that had been a poly track, so, sometimes, you know, I mean, American Pharaohs, of course, I tried to beat him with Dortmund. So,
so did I.
Yeah.
So did I.
That makes me feel, yeah. makes me feel better. You mentioned Mandaloon. I mean, Mandaloon could be second, and Mandaloon could win the Preakness. But my take on it is no horse that runs that bad in his last race mm-hmm. wins the Derby. I mean, just look at the history of it. Even people said, well, look at Thunder Gulch and look at Sea Hero. They were fourth, and they also qualified under the final fractions theory, which Mandaloon, I mean, he came home in 39, where, let's say, Hot Rod Charlie came home in 37 and change in the Louisiana Derby. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with my guns and look for the horses that I guess to explain the final fractions theory, it's the idea that in the last mile and an eighth prep, and you know, Louisiana Derby being a mile and 3/16 now, kind of, I'm not, you know, sure how that is, just not a big enough sample now. But they come home the last eighth of a mile, calculated to where they were at the pole in 13.0 or less, 13 flat or less, and the last 3/8 in 38.0 or less. And obviously, this isn't going to tell you who's going to win, but it kind of it tells you some horses that not to use on top.
That are going to be slowing down at a faster rate than the ones that are finishing less slow.
It just stands to reason, because it makes sense that is a tip-off for the horses that are want to go the extra eighth mile for mile and a quarter. And also, maybe there's some mile and quarter horses in there that are just a little bit wrung out. They're not in top form. And so the final fraction theories, which has really been a very reliable predictor.
And I referenced this the other day when I told people about Keeler Johnson's piece at ABR. And to his credit, he absolutely, in the opening paragraph, talked about you and your development of this.
Ron Flatter has, at every step of the way, has made a point to call it my theory.
Yeah.
So if people associate it with me, I've been doing it for probably, over 25 years. I got to give Ron credit. But, hey, I guess that's the form of flattery, to think that I am no Andy Beyer, but to think that there's some handicapping theory that I'm associated with that some people take seriously.
How did you talk about this?
I got to give Phil Thomas. You know Phil Thomas, the trainer.
Yeah.
He came up to me many years ago and said, I bet if you looked at it, the Derby winners all came home the last quarter mile of their last prep in under 25 seconds. And I'm looking at the charts, and I couldn't figure out. And I know, I think ABR is one that does, they do their calculations. I can't do those. I don't know. I still don't know how you do a quarter of a mile calculation. But from the chart, it's very easy to do the last eighth and the last 3/8. Mm-hmm. And there was a pattern. There definitely was a pattern. And so this year, I'm looking at, I use Ron's figures. I used to use the Twitter feed that's now defunct, but at Derby Contenders. And now I use Ron's to save me from doing the hand calculations. They use, you know, spreadsheets and stuff. But you've got the double qualifiers on this is Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, Rock Your World, sort of a, not a, he is on the eighth, but not on the 3/8. He came home in 38.5. But you've got Highly Motivated. And so I'm thinking, you know, I'm a little sad to see. Oh, yeah, no. Midnight Bourbon, because I like that horse a bit. He came home. The Louisiana Derby looks like it was a good race.
Yeah.
And that's.
It has
it's a mile and 3/16 too, so you got to think those horses.
Well, yeah, they've already gone nearly the mile and a quarter, and it is a notable and we've, you know, these couple of years that they've done this, you know, changing the configuration and stretching out the three preps at Fairgrounds to run this down the final 3/8 time and the final eighth time, so sub 38 and sub 13. For instance, Essential Quality came home in the Bluegrass in 36.34 and 12.1. Highly Motivated finished basically, you know, on fairly even terms, 36.45 and 12.21. Known agenda from the Florida Derby, 36.59, 12.84. No Rombauer coming out of the Bluegrass. Now, Obisos, who is going to be a very fashionable, late runner type that is going to figure on exotic tickets. He came home in 37.29, but the final eighth, 12.23. So it's there, but it's not as sharp as the others.
Yeah, I think he's a horse you use in the superfecta.
Exactly.
But I don't see him winning, because I still think there's things that are important. Were they a stakes winner? That's why I think a horse like Midnight Bourbon checks a lot of boxes for me. And also, again, just for handicapping the trainer and stuff, Steve, I think, really feels that horse is a good. And just truth in advertising, I should point out that Midnight Bourbon is owned by Winchell Thoroughbreds, Ron Winchell, who is, through me being PR person at Kentucky Downs, one of my employer. So I might not be completely objective on this. But I am thinking right now with Essential Quality, I mean, I remember trying to beat American Pharoah, and I remember trying to beat some other horses. And sometimes you just have to look at what you see. And that horse checks all the boxes. And his last race, I think it's good that he had to, you know, show some mm-hmm. fight and dig in. And how fast do you want him to come home? He came home in 36.3. And I think he has a license. We've seen that in some of the preps before, where there's a real close, I want to say, didn't Fusechi Pegasus maybe barely win the wood? I might be remembering wrong on that. But then he comes and, you know, he wins the Derby. Maybe I'm confusing him with another horse. But we've seen it. Horses that, you know, it's close enough in their last prep that you think, oh, they're vulnerable. And then come Derby Day, and, you know, they're not. Oh, I tell you the prime example, Authentic, last year. Of course, that was a different. And I did not really take into account the final fractions theory last year, because I think it's a whole different thing when you get to September than when you get to with 3-year-olds.
Sure,
in
the
May.
Development.
I just felt it wasn't apples to apples.
No, the development curve and the time of the year. I mean, that's what the classics are testing at this time of year, and you know, with basically a calendar year of opportunity for 2-year-olds to, you know, to be prepared for their careers and then get to this point.
Last year, you had horses who'd run a mile and a quarter. You know, before the
Travers.
Yeah.
Tis the law.
Yeah. So, hey, Steve, before I forget, one thing I want to be sure to say is on behalf of, I think, the HBPA, and I work for both Kentucky and the National, we want to really just thank you for everything you do to bring horsemen's issues to the forefront. I think you do your homework, you'll have an opinion, but I think you've really researched it and looked at it, and we just appreciate that you are not afraid to tackle tough subjects and bring them up and to ask hard questions, truth to power.
I appreciate it. I just, you know, the horsemen, I mean, we're certainly rooting for every single stakeholder that's involved, for the players, for the breeders, for the owners, but the racetrack operators. But the horsemen have the toughest job in this, you know, in this whole equation. It's the most demanding. It's the most perilous. You know, people are going to say, well, the owners are spending the money and they're buying the horse. Yes, but it's expendable income. There aren't people that are buying horses that can't afford to buy horses. The horsemen, though, they have to rely on so many different working parts. They have to, and I've discussed this, they have to be marketers, they have to be outstanding managers, they have to train personnel, they have to run that business, and they also have to be available from 4 a.m. till midnight.
I haven't been married to a guy that trained from the time he was 18 to 2 years ago. It is really tough, and any money that you make goes back into the business. Very few trainers make what you would call a real, they could make a lot more money doing something else. And the other thing, though, you mentioned is a lot of horsemen are just horsemen. They just worry about their horses, and they're not businessmen.
Exactly. And it's, and that part of it, and you know, that part, you know, people have been, you know, talking about, you know, the era of the super trainer, and part of that is, you know, not that community of horsemen, you know, is a better marketer per se, but the horsemen that have found themselves in difficult, you know, in more difficult circumstances. We had Charlie Lepresti last week
announce his retirement,
and Marty, you know, Marty very rightly, you know, took the tact in the retirement article that, you know, there's been a, you know, a steady drumbeat of excellent, excellent horsemen that for one reason or another have taken a different, you know, have gone in different directions. I mean, Davy Carroll is probably the most interesting storyline, going to work for Mark Cassie after just, you know, becoming just exasperated running the business. Mm-hmm. And so being having that alleviated from his obligation running it's been a godsend. He's so much happier.
He's happy. He loves working for Mark Cassie.
Exactly. And he
doesn't
have
to make that, you know, workers' comp note, doesn't have to worry about payroll. Doesn't have to worry about, you know, the feed man. Scott Blassie in his spot with, you know, you're when he's working for Steve Asmussen, you're going to be around the very best horses without you got headaches as an assistant. There's an empty stall because a groom didn't show or something, you know. Or maybe that filters down and it's a foreman that have to worry about that. But like I said, there's certainly a lot of headaches. They put assistant trainers might put in more hours than anybody. But it's if you get in a good outfit, I think for a lot of them, it's, you know, the opportunity to work around top, top horses without having to be the one to pay workers' comp and payroll is huge. You know, you have with Chad Brown,
all the horsemen, including Chad, because he's the easiest target and the biggest, you know, on that front, the biggest name that, you know, that's been trotted out, you know, by people looking to belittle, the training community in general. But I mean, the labor board and the, you know, the New York, you know, the New York, business side of it, has been, basically, they're in an attack mode. They know that they've got an unsophisticated, you know, sort of agrarian billing system that has been the way in which, you know, the way in which those things have been compensated forever, sort of a day rate concept. And you know, in terms of clocking people in and out, it's just so foreign to the backstretch. And they're adjusting. I mean, everybody's adjusting to it. And,
some of the stuff just seems unfair that I'm hearing.
Oh, it's completely unfair. They're fining people.
Like you give one person a bonus, you have to give everybody that bonus. And they're the ones that take care of that horse. I mean, a trainer that ran one horse up there was telling me that and how much it was going to cost him. And, you know, I root for New York. You know, we need strong racing everywhere. But I don't blame some of these trainers that Kentucky's looking more and more appealing to them because you don't have – it has nothing to do with NYRA. It has everything to do with just the regulatory up there.
Yeah, no, the state for people that spend time from Kentucky into New York, I can give you the perfect example away from the racetrack. Your dry cleaning bill. Your dry cleaning bill, this is actually a funny aside, your dry cleaning bill in Kentucky versus your dry cleaning bill in New York. And it's because in New York there's these other layers of fees and taxes on the hazardous chemicals that is lower elsewhere. So to bring in a suit, you bring it in here, it's $12. You bring it into New York, it's $20. And there's the perfect example. Now, regarding Louisville and my dry cleaning, I've got a crazy situation. For years, I would take my dry cleaning to Jim Hanna on Bardstown Road. You know, just next to the Krispy Kreme there and the Otto Nursery. And he retired. He sold the business, and it went downhill, and it closed. So I switched to Gardner Lane, you know, which is right across from Heine Brothers, also on Bardstown. And then they closed, and then I switched to the place over here on Preston Highway, and I went over yesterday, and they're closed.
To Evergreen on 3rd Street. Pre-COVID, when I actually dry clean things instead of just being in my pajamas all the time. It's 5 minutes from the track.
They're
in business. I go by there every day.
Evergreen?
Evergreen. It's near, that'd be just south of Woodlawn.
Okay. All right. I'm like the angel of death for dry cleaners. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Years ago, I was picking stuff up at Jim Hanna's, and Margolis came in. Margolis was his place. So I asked Steve where it closed. And he said, "Oh, I'm going to Gardner Lane now." And I went to Gardner Lane for like 3 years, and now they're gone. And then I went to Tip.
Black Cat here.
Well, crazy! It's the craziest thing ever. The big place. There was a crazy place on Preston that it was enormous. It was a huge, huge place. I used to get alterations there. They did a nice job of alterations, but I see it's all boarded up, and the building's being renovated. I don't know. So maybe they moved. But it's very troubling, my dry cleaning situation.
Well, speaking of, you know, all these small businesses that are going under and how, you know, why there's some media back there. I'm going to be interested to see how much media there is, because there's been such a contraction in the media and mainstream media just aren't traveling. And a lot of them have gotten used to, not traveling and doing everything remotely. So if I could put some shameless plugs in for a couple
of them. Yeah, go ahead. Of course.
I'm this week out. Well, I mean, I do some, multiple things, but the main thing I'm doing here and credentialed for with the Kentucky Derby is the Kentucky HPPA, and part of our communications deal to try to help fill that void in content by producing. Well, I mainly do a little iPhone videos of the trainer, send them out, and then people can use it for TV, they can use it for radio, they can use it for what they just need, the clips. And those are all available on the Kentucky HBPA YouTube channel. Again, if I could get a shameless plug in. But I'm real proud of the Kentucky HBPA. I mean, that they are, wanting to do things to get more out about horse racing in the mainstream media, and also to help the trades. The trades are, short on staff too, and it's something I obviously really enjoy doing. Also, if I could get in a plug for Kentucky Downs,
of course.
We released a couple of weeks ago our stakes schedule. We got $3 million races this year, and in addition to the Calumet Turf Cup, which is now a Grade Two, the Tourist Mile is becoming the Windstar Farm Mint Million. And it's $1 million. And our win and you're in last two years with the Breeders' Cup, the Turf Sprint, is $1 million now. Our two restricted stakes are going to be $400,000. All the graded stakes are at least $600,000. And I was real happy this morning talking to Chad Brown on the backside at Churchill, where he was a president at Kentucky Downs for the first time last year, which we thought. We used to joke about the motto ought to be Kentucky Downs, where the money is and Chad Brown isn't. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way, because if you're the other horseman, but believe me, we're thrilled to have Chad Brown there. Yeah, no, I mean, and he was a presence last year, and he's going to be back this year. And that was the main thing I wanted to hear was, so, no, believe me, that was just like, okay, maybe it was a little, but it was just like a joke to say, we have all this money, and you would think with all the turf horses, but Chad, you know him so well. He's so analytical about things, and it's things like the logistics and stuff like that, but he definitely plans to be back in Kentucky now, so that's great news. for us. And
stop worrying about Chad. I'd worry a bit more about Mike Maker, who's unstoppable over there. He's the biggest, the 800-pound gorilla.
Yeah, but we can't use that as a motto.
No,
Kentucky Downs where the money is, and Mike Maker's there too. You know, so that was that. Way, you know, when I came up with that was after Chad had won the Arlington Million and finished like 1-2. In the Arlington Million, 1-2-3 in the Beverly D. That's what I came up with that because like. Couldn't we just get one of his like his third place horse to come this way? But now he's a brilliant trainer and you know he's somebody that's more of a presence in Kentucky. One thing that's sort of throwing a wrinkle into things this summer though is you know Churchill Downs after this meet they're closed for stabling. For many years have been open. They're replacing the turf course and that's going to change the dynamics. Where do people go?
Well, there's a lot of that happening. In fact, I'm going to bring it up with Mike Welch when Mike joins us next hour. The situation at Gulfstream is going to get interesting because they're going to put in this synthetic. They're going to use one of the turf courses as a tapeta course. And, it's going to limit how much turf racing they're going to be able to do. And, you know, obviously, if you have only one turf course, that means you can run half as many turf races technically, or you know, give or take. There's some real things like this that are going on in a lot of places about how the construction and so forth is going to affect the schedules and horses' opportunity. So an interesting sidebar.
Yeah. I got a call from one of my bosses.
Go ahead. Actually, timing is perfect. We're going to talk to you again. There's some Breeders' Cup news later today.
Well, we hope.
Okay. All right. We're watching. We'll be watching The Wire, and we'll get Jenny's help. Jenny Reese, everybody, with a little bit of the final 3/8 conversation. We're going to stay here. That's why we took that break, and check in on Rich Migliori. Case, give Rich a call, and we'll bring Rich into the party.